Hello, and welcome to Resync, an Assassin's Creed podcast. It's me, Landon. It's you, Lucas.
That's me.
It's you guys, the audience.
Oh, yeah.
How's it going, guys?
How are you guys?
Hey, it's been a fun time. It's been a fun week. Lucas was actually prepared this time because of last week, you know, playing two sequences. So, you know, it's a fun time. It's an exciting time. We're finally getting into the nitty gritty of it. I think sequence 4 is really the first sequence that, like, you know, you're actually, I think, like, fully opened up to the broader aspects of Assassin's Creed. I still think there's a fair bit of, like, you know, obviously, like, setup and tutorialization of it. But, you know, there is a lot of distractions in sequence 4. Sequence 4 took me a lot longer than, you know, any of the previous sequences, even though it was like a tad bit longer than sequences 2 and 3, but still not near as long as 1 in terms of the actual like main story content. But there was a lot of extra stuff to do, and it's exciting to really get into like the meat and bones of this game.
Yeah, this is when the game starts really feeling like the game. Like,
exactly.
Like, you're all assassined up. You're not really scared of too much anymore. At least I wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've been through it. So, yeah, it's a super fun time. And like, this sequence made me realize how much I had forgotten about Assassin's Creed 2 and just like the, like, I was just like I forgot about the whole arc with La Volpe that begins here in this sequence. Like, I completely forgot about him as a character and a lot of this stuff, because, you know, the early stuff is usually it's the stuff that most people have played. It's the stuff that gets memed, you know, even like, you know, the Hookblade meme from Revelations. That's within the first couple hours of the game. You know, a lot of the more memorable stuff in a game is either the very beginning or the very end. And, you know, a lot of that like middle stuff does kind of like fall out of the grace of memory and whatnot. And so now that we actually, like I said, are getting into the meat and bones of this game, I'm remembering a lot of this stuff and experiencing this stuff for the first time in over a decade. And just, you know, it's exciting to be able to. I feel similar to like how you were in season 1 about playing. Like, Assassin's Creed has been so long. I remember, like, that's how I feel now going into 2. And it's been so long since I've played this part of the game. And just such a good, like, nostalgia trip back, especially, you know, with it being one of the greatest games of all time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, season 4 is where I really, that's where I, like, started feeling the nostalgia again. I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic stuff. But real quick, before we get into the nitty gritty, I'm going to go over last week's trivia question real quick, which was the name of your next target, the father of Vieri. It is Francesco de Pazzi.
A bitch.
Yeah, you definitely should know by now if you actually played along and played through sequence 4, because he's mentioned quite frequently.
A lot.
But he'd also been mentioned a few times prior to this sequence, and so congrats to all who guessed correctly on that. But we get into this week's trivia in a moment. Also, huge shout out to everybody over on Patreon. Like I said, last week we had our first ever bonus plus episode over Assassin's Creed in 2025. And I'm going to be honest, that episode's probably my favorite episode that we've made, like, not trying to upsell, because obviously, you know, like, that's the one episode that's behind a paywall. But like, it really was a really fun time. So heavily encourage you guys.
It was also our longest episode.
Yeah, it was the longest episode we ever made. Not by a ton, you know, it was like 1 hour and 5 minutes, but like, still had a lot of great times talking about, you know, what's coming up next for Assassin's Creed, what we have to look forward to this year, potential things, so on and so forth, because there's been some leaks which we didn't talk about in that bonus plus episode. But I've heard some more, like, more and more rumors talking about the potential of a Black Flag remake coming out this year in late 2025. And we get a reveal in the summer.
That'd be pretty cool.
I don't know if that's going to be a thing. We'll see. Honestly, I think a lot rides on the success of Shadows. You know, it's there. Ubisoft is at their breaking point right now. So, you know, we'll see how that turns out. But Anyway, I digress. It's a really cool episode. You should definitely check it out if you haven't already. All you got to do is head over to Patreon and be one of our apprentice tiers, which is $5 a month. And you get access to the bonus plus episode and any and all future ones. So, you know, you get more value the longer you're subscribed, essentially. And so, you know, and access to all of our stuff a day early and really cool stuff. Yeah. It's a fun time. So go on over and check it out. And even if you aren't willing to support financially, you can still join as a free member because it's our communication hub. Just want to continue plugging that as we keep getting more and more new people all the time, which welcome you guys. You know, I doubt you're starting with this episode. I imagine, you know, you guys have been working your way through. But, you know, just in case, hi. Appreciate the growing support we've been getting. And so, yeah, really fun times. But anywho, let's get into it. Sequence 4, Assassin's Creed 2. Because we didn't really get too much Shadows news. Just a lot of people fighting over it, essentially. And the growing discourse about Assassin's Creed Shadows has gotten very tiring. I just want to play the game, and it looks cool, and I'm excited. So, fuck all the haters. I don't care. But anyway, at the start of Sequence 4, Ezio talks to Claudia, who is now Monteregioni's accountant, detailing the villa's income and introducing passive income for Ezio. Because we got that now. There's literally like a city management sim built into Assassin's Creed 2. From the first game, I mean, the first game was very pretty linear. Like, it was open area, but like a very, like, you know, linear story-driven game. Assassin's Creed 2 opens things up so much more, has all these little side things and going, you know, still follows a fairly linear structure, but there's so much more openness to it and just the areas and things you can do and different little components that feed into each other. How did you feel about this kind of like management system that they put into place here?
I honestly, like, I'm glad it's something that doesn't really like impact the game too much. Like, it's not like if you won't be able to get past a certain part of the game if you don't level your stuff up, like, or get all the shops or do whatever you need to do. But like, it does reward you for getting them. So like, it is nice to also just have them in your main hub. Like, the first thing I got was a dye shop, so that I could dye my clothes. It was just right there.
Yeah,
and it makes me money now.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that town is worth more.
Right. I am a huge sucker for, like, watching, like, community isn't the right word, but just, like, watching the growth and development of something I've built, but I'm also lazy and I don't really like, I've never been this massive Minecraft fan because as a creative writing major, I don't have the creativity for video games. It's just not good. When, like, if I want to create stuff, I want to do it all on my own. When I'm playing a video game, I want it to tell me what to do, and then I'll do it. I don't know what it is. It's just, I'm not down for big creative sandboxes. It's just never been something for me. So something like this, where it just gives me a bunch of options to like automatically like flesh out my city for me. I just put a little bit of money and then I get paid for it. Fantastic. I love it. I love it. And then, you know, seeing Monteregioni literally grow before you as you're dumping money in to then, you know, increase your own income. Like, I think I've got like 1,500 florins sitting in my chest right now, because I just I dumped money into that thing because I literally like I bought the art shop, and then I bought a ton of paintings to increase the value of Monteregioni. I currently own all of the paintings available in Florence. So I've got all of those, and that really increased the value of Monteregioni. So we're getting a lot of people. What can I say? I'm a fancy art guy, I guess. Kind of how I've been going about it has been like, bless you.
Thank you. Oh, man.
But I've been kind of approaching how I spend money as like, whenever I have money, the first shop that I come across, I will spend whatever I have there. If, you know, I have access to stuff, and that's just kind of how I'm going. Instead of saving for any particular thing, it's, oh, like, I'll do a mission, then I'll have, like, $4,000. oh, well, the first thing I come across is a blacksmith while I'm getting some armor or something. Mm-hmm. Or, like, you know, the first thing I come across is a dye shop, so I'm going to buy some treasure maps or whatever the fuck. You know, like, it just depends on where I end up, has kind of been how I've been playing. Again, it's more of, like, a natural style and whatnot. And I'm not too concerned with not having money for things simply because, like, my plan now, like, finishing the sequence, going into Sequence 5, heading back to Monteregioni, hitting that bank, and then just dumping it into Monteregioni.
I feel like, too, this game gives you money pretty easy.
And in a lot of different ways, too.
A lot of different ways, yeah. Like, I haven't been trying to get a bunch of money. I haven't even, like, gone on my way to get it. But I still have, like, almost 10 grand or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you make money pretty quickly. Like, again, like, I was spending the money, like, pretty much as fast as I was making it. But yeah. I was making, like, 4 grand every 20 minutes, yeah, it felt like.
I would just stumble upon those chests. Like, I haven't even, like, gotten the maps out even, really. I'll just stumble upon those chests, and those are worth so much.
Oh, 100%. And they go all over the place. Like, there's some that have, like, 100, and there's some that have, like, 500. Like, it goes all over the place. And so, yeah. They definitely throw money at you pretty frequently. And I love that, too. Like, I'm all for having, like, balanced systems and whatnot. And not to say that Assassin's Creed 2 is unbalanced, but I do love games that just prioritize more. Because there's a lot, like, there are a lot of expensive things in Assassin's Creed 2, and there's just a lot of stuff to buy. So it's not like you're going to constantly be buying all the stock of everything. You're still going to be saving up, but you are also constantly getting money. You never feel like you're broke, and you pretty consistently can get new things. Yeah, it's a really well-balanced system,
and honestly. If you are broke, it's not that much grinding to, like, get what you need to, exactly. Like, pass a mission or whatever you need the money for.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're always... It's the game keeps up with your spending in a way that makes it so that you can't constantly be clearing stock, but you're also pretty consistently getting new equipment via whatever it is you're investing in.
Yeah.
And so there's a very good economic system in Assassin's Creed 2, which, again, is just something that was completely absent from the first game.
Yeah, which I don't even, like, remember thinking about it being that crazy of a thing. Like, back when I was playing it, it was just like, oh, this is Assassin's Creed 2. This is really good stuff. And, like, now seeing it, like, now I'm like, man, they just pioneered a bunch of shit, like, paved the way for a bunch of their stuff that they're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it does feel like, you know, a lot of people will credit Assassin's Creed 3 or Black Flag with a lot of, like, their big jumps. But, like, it really was Assassin's Creed 2.
Yeah.
That was that huge leap forward, which I think a lot of people, you know, at the time are well aware of that. Like, people who played 2 at launch are well aware of that. But I think a lot of more modern fans, or at least ones that came around from, like, 3 forward, will usually credit 3 or 4 as being that. But when really, it goes all the way back to 2.
2.
And, you know, it is the thing. Like, yes, is like 2 is just a very good game for 2009 and everything, and it's fantastic and all that stuff. But, like, you know, even beyond just it as a game itself, it did so much for the franchise as a whole. It set so many precedents. It put so many different ideas into play that were pretty rock solid from the jump.
Yeah.
Really, the only issue that Assassin's Creed 2 has going for it is simply the tech. You know, there's only so much they could do with 2009 hardware. And so, like, I talk about, like, the physics engine. I think the physics engine is largely unaltered. And, you know, like, they've obviously made leaps and bounds, pun intended, you know, to make it better. But, you know, that's really the only qualm I have with Assassin's Creed 2 is just some of this technology and software they had just wasn't quite up to a date. But in terms of the ideas, the gameplay execution, all of that, just miles ahead of what everybody else was doing at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy just to think about how far ahead this game really was.
Yeah. It's exciting. But yeah, lots of really cool stuff. But like I said, Ezio's talking to Claudia, getting all this stuff figured out. Claudia's not happy. She has to be put to work.
But she's working. She's doing it.
Yep. She's Miss Accountant Lady. And so next up, you meet the architect who can build and upgrade structures within Montrejoni to boost your income. Like I said, we already kind of got into that. Just got talking to those people. Like I said, you can talk to Cloudy at any time to then review your finances and like get a breakdown of what you're getting income from where and what all this stuff. And
yeah. Or if you just don't care and just want to collect your money, then just go to the chest.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a chest, which does have a limit. You know, that it does fill up eventually.
Claudia says that she'll take any extra money.
Exactly. So you do kind of have to keep up with that. But as you upgrade, you know, as you essentially as you earn more income, the capacity increases. So it's not like it always, because when she like the starting max amount was like $800 or something like that. I was like, damn, that's going to fill up fast, because, you know, sometimes you're away from Montrejani for like hours at a time because you're working, you know, you're doing assassin shit. I'm not just going to like stop my investigation because, oh, I'm about to run out of space in my chest. Let me go run back. So like, yeah, but as you're upgrading, which like I said, I did a bunch of upgrading for that chest. So, which I'm trying to think, I think outside of Montrejani, like the architect stuff, I think the paintings are the only way for you to upgrade that outside of Montrejani. So I'm kind of glad I did so much investing, because like I said, I earned a lot of money in there. And so thank God it was not at that original cap, because I would have maxed it out if not. And I'm probably pretty close, if not maxed out as well, just from doing that. I'm min-maxing. So that's what I'm doing. I'm scamming the Assassin's Creed economy. But yeah, like I said, interesting systems and really cool stuff that they've got being put into place here. Then finally, Mario takes Ezio to an underground sanctum.
Hidden bookshelf freaking secret door.
Exactly. Heading down and holding the armor of Altair, sealed by locks, said to be unlocked by exploring crypts throughout Italy. And so he's basically like, I spent my whole life looking for these crypts.
He didn't find one.
He didn't find one. And he's like, maybe you'll have better luck than I will, because this is really cool armor. He's
like, look at it.
Look at it. It's so cool.
It's light.
Wow.
And strong.
The super old armor. That'd be like finding a there's a gun locked up from 100 years ago and be like, this is the most powerful gun in existence. He's like, but it's hundreds of years old. Like, how? But, you know, video game logic.
This is magic armor.
Exactly. This is Apple of Eden armor. But anyway, going back to Florence, though, it also gives a date. So you could have noticed this by paying attention to the DNA section of the menu, but sequence 3 takes place over the course of 2 years. That whole training arc that he does with Mario takes 2 years. So it's now 1478. It's been a couple years, and Ezio comes back to Florence, and he meets with Leonardo because, remember back in the last sequence, when Mario was talking about, you know, decoding the codex, he had talked about, you know, visiting with Leonardo to, you know, decode them, because they don't know anyone else who can do that. And so they do a little bit of catching up. You know, Leonardo's got an upgraded workshop. Looks like the makings of some interesting inventions. Don't know anything about that. No. But, you know, he's got an upgraded workshop. He's got an assistant now. You know, he, like, bro's been doing well for himself.
Moving up.
Exactly. But, you know, revisits Leonardo, who decodes another codex page, teaching him several new assassination techniques.
Hell yeah.
So now we know how to assassinate from a hiding spot, like the hay barrels. And then assassinate from the ledge, which...
I like that one.
That wasn't in the first game, right?
No.
That's what I thought. Another, just... classic edition for Assassin's Creed. You know, it's one of the main things to do. It's just like, yeah, hanging from a ledge and somebody walks up and do a little woo, you know.
I like how in this one you like skewer him and then you like pull him over.
Literally. It's great. Sorry. I'm very tired. But assassinate from ledge for the first time in the franchise, as well as air assassinate, which is just always satisfying. I mean, like jumping from the roofs or wherever you're at just to go and plummet down on top of them completely unknown. Like, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's fantastic. We love it. And so, always a fun time. As well as gaining a second hidden blade and an armor plate to deflect attacks with them. So making them a little more viable combat option.
Yeah, now you have two on each arm.
So you can do double assassinations.
Double assassinations. And double civilian kills.
Yeah, exactly. I had talked about, before the podcast, we had talked about, you know, just this little things about the sequence. And I mentioned about how there was one time I was trying to pull off a double assassination with some guards, but a crowd walked by right as I did it, and I accidentally killed two civilians. So then I got yelled at by the game because, you know, you can desync for killing civilians because Ezio didn't do that. And then the guards got mad at me, and it triggered everything, and I still had to fight them anyway. And so it was just a lose-lose situation. I wasn't happy about it. You know, it put me in a sticky situation. But
That's where the age will show in this game. But, yeah. Like, that's not a terrible thing.
Yeah, you know, it's definitely not perfect, but for 2009, again, pretty cool. Like, because the amount of NPCs that are in this game, that's one thing Assassin's Creed has pretty consistently done well up until Origins. I think with, you know, the RPGs, obviously there's a lot more space, so they do kind of have to be a little more limiting when it comes to NPCs, and it doesn't even make that much sense during the time frame to have so many NPCs in one place. But, you know, going up to Syndicate, that's one thing they've done really, really well, is just crowding an absurd amount of NPCs into the game and having it function, you know, because there are a lot of autonomous people and things going around in this game from 15 years ago. It's great, which also, yeah, we did just miss the 15th anniversary of this game. It was back in November.
Dang.
And so... yeah, this game has been around for a while, but and the fact that they had all this different stuff running is technically a testament to the tech that they had. Like I said, I talk about it being a detriment, and for a lot of stuff, it is kind of there, but that's not really a detriment in terms of, like, in release, because in 2009, this is top-of-the-notch tech. Like, you know, just a lot of it has maybe not necessarily aged super well, but I will say the amount of assets and NPCs they have going around does still hold up. Like, that's still something you don't see in a lot of games today, much less from 15 years ago.
And I don't know what it's like for a console or wherever you're playing at, but on PC, you have different levels of, like, population, like, density, I guess, or crowd density or whatever the heck it's called. And I have mine turned up all the way, and I honestly feel like sometimes there's too many for freaking people. I'm like, how does it have all of these people here?
No, literally. They stuff them cities. And so, you do have one last little conversation with Leonardo talking about basically trying to find some more information about finding somebody, to which Leonardo mentions a man named La Volpe, which leads into my trivia question for this week, which is, what does La Volpe translate to? It's an Italian term. What does that mean? Let me know. That's a trivia question for this week.
What does it mean?
And so, you know, they mention it in the game, and so that is our question for the week. Let us know down in the comments below or over on our socials if you're listening via a podcast service. Patreon is a great place to do so. And yeah, let us know. But basically, he says that he's near the Mercato Vecchio, which, you know, is essentially like the marketplace. So instructs Ezio to go find La Volpe, and he'll be able to help him out. I originally took that as, like, he just, like, that La Volpe was, like, on his name, Francesco. Like, I thought that his nickname was just La Volpe. And so I was like, oh, is Leonardo just assume, like, he already knew who we were talking about because, like, oh, he's that bad of a guy. And I'm like, oh, this is actually a completely different person. This makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
And so heading to the market, a man pickpockets Ezio, chasing, like, so, you know, it's a whole thing. You have to chase him down and catch him.
When you chase that guy, how long did you have to run for?
Oh, dude, it was like 10 seconds. I pretty much had him immediately.
Yeah, that was basically... So, with literally what happened with me is, like, he didn't even get to run. I already tackled him before he started sprinting. And then it, like, did the cutscene.
Yeah, like, in a completely different location. Yeah, like, it just goes to the rooftop. Yeah.
I was like, I was not here. I was literally, like... all the way down where I just was.
Yeah, literally. I was, like, just outside the marketplace. And then all of a sudden, I was on a rooftop. I was like, did that a little too easy. But, well, again, we know what we're doing. We're master assassins over here. So, brother was down.
Yeah. Didn't stand a chance.
Did not stand a chance. But, in actuality, this is a robber. This is an associate of La Volpe, who pretty easily agrees to help Ezio, but he's also suspiciously in assassin's attire.
Yeah.
So, again, a lot of this stuff is just so old, like, I don't even remember the specifics, but I'm willing to wage a bet that this man is part of the Assassin's Order.
In some way, shape, or form.
But, or at least connected somehow. Yeah. But my thing is, then, is like, okay, what does that say about Leonardo that he knows about La Volpe?
So, you know, couple interesting threads come out of that.
But, yeah, so we're introduced to La Volpe, which I think is a really cool, really interesting kind of, like, silver-tongued, like he'll give you kind of, like, most of the info, but, like, won't really give you more than you need type of behavior. But you already do kind of start to see a shift in his personality throughout the sequence as you, you know, do more things with him. But another just really interesting character that gets introduced into here. There's just a lot of supporting characters in this one, especially compared to the first.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The story's way more complex. So, like, the amount of characters they have in it is just, like, just so many more characters in this game. Now that I think about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's, like... five characters, like five major characters in the first game.
Yep, exactly. Like, I mean, like, there are a few supporting characters, but for the most part, again, it's very small scale, very, you know, it is very much like the start of something, whereas this just, I mean...
Yeah, you have Mario, Claudia, Leonardo, other people that I can't think of right now.
La Volpe that we've just been talking about.
That guy.
There's a pretty large cast in this game of all just really well fleshed out
this
characters.
This is like not even halfway through the game yet.
Exactly. And so, you know, we're still in the first act. I mean, it is pretty insane. But basically La Volpe is like, hey, meet me at Santa Maria Novella, which is where, you know, a church. And is basically like, come on, and runs off. You got to chase after him. Which is another thing. He's scaling rooftops really well.
Really well.
Just he seems to do a lot of stuff that Ezio does really well.
And he's doing it pretty well, too. I feel like you got to be trained up if you're, like, in your 40s, 50s doing that.
Yeah. Very interesting. Sorry for yawning over and over again.
Yeah, shut the fuck up.
I'm trying. But at the church, he's basically like, yep, Francesco's in there. And you can use these catacombs underneath to figure out where they're, you know, where it's taking place.
Yeah, and the button to the little door is the Assassin's Creed symbol.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Yeah. Which, you know, like... an hour or so after Mario tells you, I've been searching for these crypts all my life and I've never found a single one. Well, you find a crypt.
Yeah, you stumble upon it.
Exactly. So, you know, this is a half tutorial, half continuation of the story in that you have to go through this crypt, which are essentially like these like side mission, like little like fairly like elaborate puzzles that you have to solve to then get access to one of the, you know, unlock essentially dials or dais or discs or, you know, like whatever they are to unlock a part of the underground sanctum beneath Villa Auditore. And so this is one that, you know, you then get as part of the mission, but then infiltrate. And you figure out that the Templars are actually planning something involving the Medici family, and that they're gathering a ton of weapons. They've got a militia. Like, there's something big that's about to go down. And it seems to be an attack on the Medici. Yeah,
talking about weapons and all sorts of, you know, attacky stuff.
Yeah. And so, just, you know, very interesting stuff here. And like I said, like, you're then also opened up, like, once you finish that mission, to a whole suite of, you know, things that are, like, of different side missions. There's other crypts that you can find, all kinds of stuff. And I did a lot of it. And, you know, I got distracted a fair bit. I played this for a solid, like, 2.5-3 hours because I was just doing a whole bunch of side stuff, clearing out a bunch of things, finding a bunch of treasure chests. And I also did Il Duomo's Secret, which is, you know, one of the crypts. But we are not going to talk about it because it is a side mission. It's something that can be done at any point in time. And Lucas and I agreed that, like, you know, as far as things like that go, it'd be one of those things where we wouldn't discuss it until both of us had been through it. And so when he eventually gets to that crypt, we'll bring it up in that episode, and vice versa. Like, if he were to do something before me, you know, like that sort of stuff. Well, we figured we just kind of wait until both of us have experienced it, because then it gives you guys a chance as well. Because for those playing along, I'm sure not everybody had, you know, gotten to that crypt. Some people might be just playing through the story. And so we'll do that. And we'll also make sure to have a clear, you know, spoiler warning for people who may not have necessarily played it as well.
Yeah, but I was like 3 hours into my play session at that point, because I thought I was, you know, playing one. So I was like, this is a long sequence. So I was just playing. I wasn't even focusing on that side stuff because I was just trying to get through the sequence.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you know, but I did do that and a whole bunch of other, like, things. I found, I think, 3 or 4 codex pages, and every 4 codex pages you gain some health. And so I did gain a bar of health.
Hell yeah.
Pretty happy about that. And so I saw Leonardo a lot because I just kept finding codex pages. So I would just go running back to Leonardo and have him decode it for me.
He's like, here's more health with that magic.
Exactly.
Andrew, here you go. But yeah, you know.
Jeez, Katie.
Having a rough night there.
And it's like I just woke up a couple hours ago. I don't know why I'm so tired. But anywho, you know, like I said, you kind of go to La Volpe after the fact of, you know, discussing this meeting. La Volpe's kind of freaking out. He's like, yeah, the Medici's fall, you know, the whole city falls, you know, they're going to be in the hands of Templars, blah, blah, blah. And Ezio's like, hey, I got this. Trust. And so, you know.
So you kind of got this.
Kind of. So, you know, it's church Sunday and everybody's getting ready for church. And to be fair, gotta respect Federico. He's ballsy as shit. He just comes out swinging and is like, man, fuck you, Medici. And, you know, kills Lorenzo's brother and tries to kill Lorenzo. But, you know, you do your best to fend off the Pazzi.
Yeah, he'd come in there and chop them bitches up.
Mm-hmm. Which I actually failed the first time because I killed everybody. And then I started going after Federico. And, or not Federico, fucking Francesco. And he ran away while I went to chase after him. Well, then I left the bounds and then I failed the mission.
Yeah, because you have to stay with
him. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I was just like, nah, this bitch gonna die. So I started chasing after him. And then I got desynced and I was like, oh, that's not what I'm supposed to do.
You didn't do that yet.
Well, I wanted to. Well, Stata, you know, it's fine. Don't worry about it. I was just trying to do this shit. But, you know, wasn't letting me. And so, you know, you're supposed to defend him. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I was just killing everybody, man. Everybody was dead. And I was trying to, you know, tie up loose ends.
Too efficient.
Oh, well. And so, basically, yeah, you defend Lorenzo and then have to escort him home where he can then be safe. And the whole time, like, the city is in turmoil. Like, there's guards fighting guards. You know, you've got, essentially, you know, Francesco starting this, like, revolution in the streets.
There's fires and shit. Is that what? Is there fires and shit?
Yeah, I mean, there's pretty much, like, all-out war in the streets.
Yeah. I remember seeing the guards fight each other, being like, what the fuck is happening?
Exactly. Like, who I kill? like, which one's on my side? What's going on here?
Yeah.
Like, huh? Is there a good side? I don't know. It's strictly pandemonium. And so, essentially, you got to go find and kill Francesco because, you know, then it's being told that he's, you know, going for the actual, like, prison and everything, and that he's, you know, going to do a hostile takeover of the city, and that, you know, even with Lorenzo still alive, you know, the forces are getting crippled. Like, it's, you know, this is like a multifaceted plan. And so you're like, all right, let's get to work.
Yeah. I love the name of the mission too. It's just Farewell Francisco. Like,
yep.
It's just,
because to be fair, yeah, I mean, it is, it literally is like Francesco throwing guard after guard at you, but being a complete pussy himself.
Yeah, he ran. And then that's what he said, is he didn't put up much fight, ran like a bitch.
Yep, he ran like a bitch. And so it was, you know, chasing guard after guard, which were nothing. They were little pawns in the game.
I didn't even bring out my sword for these guys. I was just using my dual assassin blade, just...
Which, how was that? I didn't actually use that. I was using my stiletto, which I now have. Okay. That was my primary weapon. And then I would whip out the sword anytime that I would face the big grunts, simply because I tried doing it with a stiletto sometime, and it was just painstakingly slow to just whittle down his health.
I really like the Assassin's Blade. Like I said, the timing's a little different because you can't parry as... parry timings, or I guess not parry timing.
The counter timing
is a little tighter than the other weapons, so you have to like be more precise.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also basically like instant one shots.
Interesting.
But you stab them, bitches.
Right.
And you can break out of the fights and come sometimes get behind them and like sneak into like a little side,
right?
Like, little.
I kill a lot of people with my sword that way. There at the end, just running through the streets. Anytime someone was behind, just like ran the sword through them. That was great. And I do appreciate, you know, this kind of the variety and different combat animations and stuff, which I think they did a really good job in the first game. But again, they really did step it up here and have a lot of really fluid and sick combat animations and a lot of variety. But I really do like the increased variety even between weapon types. And how each weapon does feel distinctive and different. A lot of cool stuff there. But, yeah, you're, you know, fighting your way up to where your brothers were imprisoned yet again. And, you know, chasing after Francesco. And, you know, but all kinds of fun stuff. He runs like a bitch. You chase after him. You kill him. Requiescat un pace, bitch.
Yeah, and then you hang his body from a church.
Yep. One of the Templar associates comes to claim victory and then, you know, find him hung by the citizens. He's like,
Francesco? And then he runs away.
Yep. And so it'll be interesting because, you know, Vieri's death, that was, you know, he was harassing, you know, people.
And he was like
that
a little bitch.
Exactly. Now multiple Templars have fallen. This is kind of a bit of a turning point where it's like, all right, someone's doing something.
This guy's got like tenure. Like, he's been part of there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we're disrupting some shit.
Exactly. So, you know, it's the start of something going on. So, the Templars might be a little more on edge now. They're like, all right, what's going on here? What, you know, there's something at foot. And we got to get to the bottom of this. And so, that is the end of sequence 4. I said, how are you feeling? Like, getting into the nitty-gritty of all of it.
I love how much the game has opened up. Because I keep forgetting that it's not, like... It's a lot more open world than the first game is.
Right.
Like, you can kind of just do whatever you want to do whatever. Go to, like, oh, I'm just going to go to this city. Mm-hmm. Just get some waypoints. Do some side missions. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're not kind of locked. I feel like you're a lot more locked in the first game.
Yeah, for sure. Again, it did feel a lot more linear. You know, to be fair, like, Assassin's Creed didn't fully go open world until, you know, like, Assassin's Creed Origins. You know, even, like, Syndicate and, like, Black Flag and everything, like, they're more, like, open-ended, like, open-area type experiences. And so they are pretty much, like, feel like open zone is the, you know, the what everybody likes to call these types of games nowadays. And it really is, I think, the best of both worlds. Because a lot of open worlds, I think, can be too open. There's too many things. It's really easy to get distracted. And a lot of times, people just kind of lose themselves in it or lose interest because of it. And so having something a little more focused like this, which allows you to then get distracted but kind of can keep you in line in a certain aspect, just works really, really well in my opinion. And a lot of my favorite games follow that method, whether it be Assassin's Creed, the new Tomb Raider trilogy, or the newer God of War games, all just kind of follow that same formula, where there's a lot of side stuff to do, there's a lot of openness to it, but there is kind of still a focused world and a focused narrative. And I do really enjoy that.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, it's a super fun time. But do you have any kind of final thoughts about the game so far or anything before we check on out of here for the week?
No.
Nope. Yeah, we're still getting in. Like, Sequence 5 is what I kind of consider to be, like, the end of Act 1, because there's 14 sequences in this game. Yeah. It's double the amount of the last game. And so we are kind of getting towards the end of this first act here.
Yeah.
But again, we'd be over halfway through the first game.
And I felt like this, like, final kind of, like, this kind of opened up the world. So, like, now we can kind of do a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of really cool stuff that we're just over the hill.
Just kind of, yeah.
Just now being able to experience. I am excited to get back to Montrejoni here at the start and, you know, collect money, do some more management, all that fun jazz. Look at how many codex pages I've got on the wall now.
Show Mario how dumbass he is for not being able to find these crypts.
Exactly, because I got two of them bitches now. And so, I think there's 9 total.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so, and I've also, I got a couple, I think I only got one more of the glitches, those glyphs. Oh, there we go. I don't think I only got one of those this time. I saw a couple more, but I was really busy and I lost track of them. And so, but I did get one.
Found one yet. Sorry.
You gotta pay more attention.
I got it.
Yeah, that's right. It's not so easy, is it? But yeah, I found some of those. Found a couple more feathers. That's just gonna be the biggest pain.
I found so many feathers, but like I feel like I didn't even make a dent in the feather. I got like maybe 7 feathers.
Yeah. You know, so I try to pay attention to it. Like I said, it's going to be, when we get to Sequence 13, it's going to be a long week for me. I'm definitely going to be playing like all week because of just grinding out whatever's left. But it still won't be as bad as the first game. Because at least it's not 420 fucking flags.
Yeah.
Ubisoft, once again, I will not forget. I am owed that trophy. Give it.
Now he deserves a physical one.
Yeah. Give me a physical trophy. Might as well. But anyway, that is going to be it for us. We're not actually going to be back next week Lucas is going to be in New York for New York Fashion Week because he's a big shot. He's in the show. I'm kidding.
I'm not. I'm not that attractive, unfortunately.
Hey.
Our friend is.
That's not true. That's not true. You're a beautiful man.
Thank you, buddy.
Beautiful boy. But yeah, we have a friend who is in the show. I'm not able to make it, but he's going. Mm-hmm. And so we will not have an episode for you guys next week. Very sorry. Apologies. But we will be back the week after to talk about Sequence 5. I'm really excited. We'll take a quick break, you know. So if any of you guys need to catch up, this is your time to do so. We'll be back the week after on the, what would it be? For Patreon people, it'll be the 17th. For everyone else, the 18th. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And so thank you so much for watching. I appreciate you guys.
Absolutely.
Like I said, head over to our Patreon. It's our communication hub. Be sure to check out all our other stuff. And appreciate you guys. Thank you for watching or listening or however you consume our content. And remember that nothing is true. Everything is permitted.
Yeah.
Requiescat in pace.